Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings in a single bound.
Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane.
It's Superman
Podcast.
Superman was created by Jerome Siegel and Joe Shuster.
Hi, I'm Stephen Biscotti.
And I'm Justin Candelaria.
And you're listening to
the Saturday Morning Superman Show.
We're back with our latest episode of the Saturday Morning Superman Show, in which we take a look at Max Fleischer's Superman theatrical shorts from 1941 to 1942. Today we have The Arctic Giant.
The Arctic Giant premiered February 27, 1942. Animation by Willard Balski, Ruben Grossman. Story by Bill Turner, Ted Pierce. Musical arrangement by Sammy Timberg. And directed by Dave Fleischer.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this episode because in a lot of like really golden age era Superman stories, you have Superman up against something like a dinosaur or like some kind of like big, you know, very pulp, very high adventure kind of character or monster. And I think while Superman he's sort of been grounded a little bit, where now he fights more like worldly threats, like a Metallo or like a Lex Luthor, or even like, I guess, like if you consider like Lobo, even though he's cosmic. In the Golden Age, you'd have him fighting stuff like dinosaurs and just like all wacky stuff like that. And I feel like this really, again, reflects, you know, the direction that they wanted to take Superman in. Ultimately, there's really no connectivity or story that continues really in this series, unlike, you know, Superman the Animated Series, or when you get to something like Batman the Animated Series. So it's kind of fun to watch each episode where it's just self-contained and it's like, oh, you know, another day in the life of Superman. And when you think about it, it's kind of funny because if you think about like Clark Kent and Superman and Lois Lane and everybody in the world of Fleischer's Superman, like how exciting would it be to like live in their world where like almost every other day is some kind of big, you know, like threat, like, you know, the mad scientist or like the electrothanasia ray or, you know, the Arctic Giant. And there's like always something happening in Metropolis here. It feels like it's the wildest and wackiest
That's
place
a very
to live
interesting
in.
Word to use, exciting, when the city's under attack.
Yeah. But without further comment, let's take a look at the Arctic Giant.
Penetrating deep into the frozen waste of the great Arctic plains, an archaeological expedition searching for prehistoric fossils makes an amazing discovery. A huge monster, as lifelike in appearance as when it roamed the Earth millions of years ago in the Mesozoic Age, is found frozen in the ice in a state of perfect preservation. Constantly handicapped by the hazardous sub-zero elements, the scientists and their band of tireless workers succeed in removing the mammoth creature from the frozen pit. The ice-encased monster is loaded into the hold of a huge freighter equipped with a special refrigeration plant and brought to this country. Here, in a specially constructed wing of the Museum of Natural Science, this awe-inspiring creature is displayed to the public for the first time.
While the logo is coming on with a Paramount picture, I would like to make mention that it's interesting because as we record this, we just saw the artwork for the first time yesterday for the Saturday Morning Superman Show. And we have an artist, he's somebody that I've been a fan of for quite a few years, Rick Sellis. And he does a very animated take on like Batman and pretty much all the characters that you could think of. He has a style that's very similar to Bruce Timm, and he purposely uses that style. That's what he enjoys the most. And he's done commissions for me in the past where I've had him commission a Livewire piece. I've had him do a piece of Superman and Lois Lane together, with Lois Lane looking a little more like the animated series and Superman looking like the animated series but wearing the Man of Steel outfit. And when we were developing the Saturday Morning Superman Show, Rick Sellis was the first person I immediately thought of. It was like, I can't go to anybody else but Rick Sellis. He has to be the guy to do the art. And at the time, I, you know, it'd been a little while since I had commissioned him. quite a few years had passed, and I wasn't sure if he was still doing it or if he was still active. And so I was on Instagram and I was looking up, you know, hashtag Superman the Animated Series, Superman TAS, and looking at all different, like, Superman art, and looking at artists that have done it, and freelancers and professionals. And I was saving, like, all of these posts on my phone thinking, like, well, oh man, like, if Rick can't do it, you know, I'm going to have to get somebody else to. And I have, like, now, like, a whole bunch of people that I have in mind. But, you know, with stuff like that, you never really know how much it's going to cost or anything. And I really wanted Rick to be the guy to do it. So I had emailed him and I told him the idea that I had, where it was just, you know, I'd like super, like, you know, I want to kind of have like an homage to All-Star Superman where he's sitting on a cloud and he's got headphones on. And that was always the image that I had in my head. I wanted it to be Superman with headphones on, and he's just listening to the Saturday Morning Superman show. I wanted that to be the thing that sells the show. I want people to identify with that first and foremost. And sure enough, I emailed him. He got back to me. He said that he'd love to do it. And I mean, like, the rest was just really a waiting period of almost really summer 2019. We waited from, I think, when we commissioned him in June to really beginning to mid August. And it was yesterday I got an email from him, and the second I saw an email from Rick Sellis, I was like, oh boy, I know immediately what this is. Opened it, and he had the preliminary sketch draft of the Saturday Morning Superman show podcast art. And he asked me, like, do I want to make any changes to it? You know, do I have any ideas, suggestions, anything that he should keep on doing, anything that he should do differently? And I told him, really, Rick, like, I love it. I wouldn't change a thing. And so he was able to then take that and then proceed with finishing it. And so as of this recording, we now know what the podcast art looks like, which will be quite funny for everybody listening to this show now, considering that you're listening to it and the podcast art's already been out, you know, for quite some time. But again, I want to remind everybody that we've actually been recording this in blocks and episodes at a time in advance. And it's just a different approach to podcasting that we find really works for us. And we hope you like it too. And so for the sake of mentioning this, I'll be posting Rick Sellis's art again on Instagram, and I highly recommend you follow him, especially if you like the art, and we really hope you connect with the imagery as much as we do. But one of the things that I really love about the Fleischer Superman shorts are that each episode gets a title card. We didn't get a title card in Superman the Animated Series, but we did in Batman, and I think the title card really adds something to each episode.
It adds a theme, it adds, you know, kind of like what to expect in a way, gives it its own spin, and it kind of really screams, you know, again, classic cartoons from the 40s, 30s, because I believe even like live action serials used to have title cards like that, like, for example, like Levon Pierre, you know, just like serials people would just go to the movie theaters to see. So since the Fleischer Superman was kind of the more adult one, it's a kind of a no-brainer to have its own take on
that.
Yeah,
you look at the Max Fleischer Superman 1941 it aired in, and you know, 1941 was also the year that The Wolfman came out, and all of those Universal movies, they would have like a little title card and everything too. So it adds something different to the show. But we see this episode open up in Siberia, and a huge monster, a lifelike, like a life size, you know, like monster that they say from the Mesozoic age was preserved in ice. And it's very science fiction-y, but we're brought up to date where you have people working on, I guess, like the monster. They have him basically on a ship, and they're bringing him back to New York, to Metropolis.
This is basically Godzilla, Steven. Like, everything just screams Godzilla here.
Godzilla, a little Jurassic Park for sure.
Even the T-Rex just looks like not even a T-Rex. It just looks like more like Godzilla, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, it's funny because the thing is, like, now this is supposed... They say in on the opening card where they have him preserved in ice that it's a Tyrannosaurus.
Yeah, not a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Yeah. And so, like, it's a Tyrannosaurus, but the design of him is completely, like, a big Godzilla-looking lizard. And it's kind of interesting because the thing is, I really feel like in the 90s with Jurassic Park, that's where it really... captured people's imaginations as to, you know, dinosaurs and how they look, how they sound even. And when you look at, like, dinosaurs that appeared in, let's say, like, Marion C. Cooper's King Kong, in this, you know, they look more or less like dinosaurs as we come to believe that they looked, but they're very lizard-like, I guess, and it's just very funny.
That... Also, I would say toy-like, especially the one in this one reminds me just like an overgrown, oversized like toy that Superman's fighting. Even though Godzilla, the first one, came out in 1954, which is like a little over a decade from when The Flies of Superman aired, I feel like things like that kind of maybe got like inspiration from an episode like this. You know, maybe the creator of Godzilla was watching this Fleischer episode and was like, I want to make a monster called Godzilla and make it just as big as that T-Rex or that Tyrannosaurus monster from this Fleischer Superman and just call it Godzilla. And then we have all these American adaptations, but it's, I don't know, it's like an interesting point. It's like maybe he got inspiration from this because this feels so close to Godzilla that who knows, maybe it was inspired by it. But in the episode, we have, you know, as all things should fail when they're encased in ice, you're never going to have the refrigerator running the right way, so it's obviously going to break.
Yeah, it's funny. The worker, he's giving Lois Lane a tour of the facility, and he's telling her how, like, the temperature has to be at a certain a spot. You know, they have to monitor it, and he puts one of his tools on the side, and, of course, the vibration of the machinery knocks his tools into the machine, which destroys it. So it's kind of funny how it was his own carelessness that brought to life this dinosaur that's been frozen for years.
Well, I think we know who's getting fired after this show. But so the dinosaur gets out, and I think Lois Lane was in a booth, a phone booth or something like that.
I don't know. She was calling the Daily Planet.
Yeah, okay, I was about to say because she could call the Daily Planet or call 911, but that's not going to protect her at all. But you know, it's a cartoon, and Tyrannosaurus is like so oversized. When you said Mesozoic age, okay, I was thinking like maybe a little bit smaller. But this is like, I feel like they just blow it up just for Superman to fight.
Oh, completely, yeah. I mean, like, the scale of him, like, where you see him in relation to the buildings, like, he's pretty huge. Arctic Monster runs amok in city. And, of course, Clark sees that. And as we've come to know and love about Clark Kent, he finds a spot to change. And he turns into Superman, and he goes off to save the day.
In a classic noir closet with the shower.
I gotta say, I think the change in this one was very, very cool.
Yeah.
And I like the motion noir right now of Superman's movement, where he's really just like leaping from rooftop to rooftop. And there was just something really sharp about that animation and something very fluid about his movement. I think what's really fun about the animation that you find within Fleischer's Superman is that they really capture the motion of Superman very well. And it's not to say that that hasn't been caught well before on camera or in animation. But sometimes it's just like a certain way that they capture like his power, really, that comes across in a really fun way. And I think in this, you see him doing a lot of leaping, and the leaping just translates really well to animation. Actually, it reminds me a lot of that like shot from like the first Sam Raimi Spider-Man movie
where
you
see him.
Yeah, and in regards to like things that inspired other things, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if the early days of Superman's movement inspired Sam Raimi in some form or another to do that scene. But you have Superman, he's helping, you know, clean up from like the damage that the Tyrannosaurus is causing across the city. He saves like a bridge. He's doing a lot of things that like, you know, we've come to like appreciate about Superman, and he's repairing the bridge, and that's a lot of fun to watch. And of course, he captures the Tyrannosaurus, or he attempts to, by wrapping him up by the legs.
Have you seen that really old movie, Steven?
Yes.
Yeah, Empire Strikes Back.
Yes.
That was the first thing when I saw that. I was about to turn to you. I was just like, have you seen that really old movie?
And now there's a scene. It's at the around the 8 minute mark where Superman is fighting the Tyrannosaurus and he's in the Tyrannosaurus's mouth. And I'd like to point out that that's a callback. It's not a callback, actually. Okay, I have to stand corrected. Fleischer came before Superman the Animated Series, naturally, and that moment actually calls to mind, now in watching it, the episode from Superman the Animated Series with the robotic T-Rex. And Little Piece of Home was the name of the episode. Little Piece of Home. And if you go back and watch the Little Piece of Home with the trivia on it, Bruce Timm does make mention that was an explicit reference to the Arctic Monster in this episode. So if you're watching Fleischer's episodes first and then you go back to Superman the Animated Series and maybe you're choosing to listen to the Saturday Morning Superman show in that way, Arctic Monster definitely sets up A Little Piece of Home. And if you watch A Little Piece of Home and then you go back to this, you'll immediately remember, like, oh yeah, that's where they got it from.
And that is a true homage to the Fleischer series that the animated series does very well and very interesting, like, while keeping, you know, a similar type of episode in mind. And I want to make note in the episode when the monster goes to the dam, destroys the dam, and all the water floods the town right below the dam.
Yeah.
There had to been some deaths in that scene, Steven. And
yeah. Well, it's interesting because, like, you see, okay, so
who lives in the
dam? I mean, like, geography alone, if you want to think about, like, the way they depict, you know, the city, you know, in Superman, the Fleischer shorts. It's supposed to be New York, but it's Metropolis, yeah. But there's a lot of areas to it that don't necessarily translate to New York, and because, like, with the dam, it kind of reminded me a little bit of like Nevada, San Francisco. With the trains that they had, there was a shot where the Tyrannosaurus crushes the trains, where he walks by it, and while we do have elevated trains, of course, in New York City, that brought more to mind, like, Chicago again.
Yeah.
And so I think it's interesting at how, you know, when you look at, like, DC and their presentation of cities, so much of it's, you know, like, all in these fictionalized versions of real cities. So you have Gotham City, you have Metropolis, Coast City, you name it. Whereas, like, in Marvel, it's just, it's New York. It's within our own country. And I do appreciate that... that within live action, I mean, granted, of course, it's live action, so you have to film somewhere on location, but I like being able to identify a superhero more with a city. I think it just adds a little something special to it where, you know, if you could look out your window and imagine that you could see Superman fly by, or you could look at this down your street and see, you know, the Batmobile go down your block, it just adds a little more connectivity to it, and it feels a little bit more... like you're a part of it.
It's like in the CW verse when it's like, you know, you're taking the train to Central City. It's like, oh, that's the city of the Flash. Yeah. Or like you go into, you know, Star City.
Yeah,
city
completely. Of the Green Arrow. Yeah, yeah. And I really do like that. I like, I do like the presentation of the city in the Fleischer's animated series. And especially, you know, I love Bruce Timm's depiction of it. But I have to say that I think... my favorite, actually, no, I'm not going to even say I think. That's a lie. My favorite Metropolis ever is Chicago from Man of Steel and Batman versus Superman. I've been to Chicago twice, and I went the year right around the time that Batman vs. Superman was filming. They'd actually just finished filming a few weeks prior to when I got there. And then I went the month that Batman vs. Superman came out. So I went once in 2015 and once in 2016. I do plan on going back. I love the city so much, especially they filmed, you know, Dark Knight there. Mm-hmm. And parts of Batman Begins. And I can't recommend the city enough, especially if you're a DC guy. And it's cool because around the time of Batman vs. Superman, Time Out released like a digest called like A Guide to Metropolis and A Guide to Gotham City. And it's like a, you know, a faux in-world travel guide to like if you were going to go to the city. And it's all photos of Metropolis, and it's all photos of Metropolis, but, you know, of Chicago, and it's all photos of, like, Gotham City, but of Detroit, and it's kind of cool to, like, look at locations and think, like, oh, wow, that's Metropolis, and now I could go to Chicago and really feel like I'm truly in, you know, the city where Superman would be, and I think that's fun. Also, before we conclude, my challenge for this episode is for anybody that's interested, count how many times I said the city, or Justin and I said the city. I think I've said like the city like a record number of times, and just like if anybody could tally how many times like I said the city, just right let now. Me know. I won't be sending anything out, but but just like if you want to create like a fun tally and let us know, please do. Also, un-Superman related, The City is the opening track on the 1975 album, their debut album, The 1975. Favorite band, highly recommended, so listen to The 1975, listen to The City. That just about does it for our episode of the Saturday Morning Superman Show. And before we forget, where can we find you, Justin?
You can find me at Justin Candelaria on Instagram. Remember, that's always Justin with a Y. And then you can find me at Prime Critic Entertainment on Instagram and Twitter also.
And you could find me on Twitter at Reggie Mantle III. That's uppercase III. And you could find me on Instagram at Sherbert Downey Jr. And be sure to comment, like, share, review, follow the Saturday Morning Superman Show on Instagram and Twitter. We hope you enjoy, and we'll see you next week.
The Saturday Morning Superman Show is brought to you in part by Royal Collectibles, your friendly neighborhood comic book shop located in Forest Hills, Queens, New York, offering some of the best in pop culture needs and collectibles.